Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, you will be familiar with this wine. You haven't had this exact vintage, but you know we've had its ancestors.
It is a Beaujolais Villages Nouveau. Is this that thing that you pull out every year?
It's the Beaujolais Nouveau. They just got them in yesterday.
You know, that's how I know we've been doing this podcast for so many years now, because that's like your tradition. So, does it have anything to do with anything, or is it just the fact that it's that time of year?
It has nothing to do with anything, but I look forward to this wine all year. It always comes out in November. Beaujolais is my favorite French wine, and when they come out with the Nouveaux in November, I think it is just a time to feast.
You know, hey, I'm happy for you.
All right, there's a lot going on this episode, because Thanksgiving is traditionally a time to stock the theaters. Families come from far and wide to meet up, they get tired of each other, and they just said, we need a break, let's go to the movies. And there's always lots of family fare, so there's going to be lots of family fare on this episode, with the biggest of them all, the one that's going to kill the box office, make way over $100 million, be one of the highest grossing Disney films or any film of all time, Frozen 2. Mm-hmm. A known quantity, because sequels usually do pretty well if the first one was popular. And 2013's Frozen was indeed popular. We saw it on Disney on Ice this year.
Yeah, well, it's the highest grossing animated film of all time in the worldwide box office.
I did not know that. It did win Best Animated Feature at the Oscars.
Yeah.
And the filmmakers, Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck, are back to see if they can create magic the second time. Well, I'll just ask you, did they create magic the second time?
They created some magic. To me, not the level of magic that there was in the original Frozen. But as sequels go, it's a very good sequel. But there is no Let It Go in this film.
There is no Let It Go. There are many, many songs. Mm-hmm. None that particularly stand out. I went back and listened to a couple that I thought maybe would have stand out. Yeah. And I didn't hear it.
They're all catchy. They're good.
I didn't like the first film. There's nothing I really liked about it. I did not like Frozen. There were five other animated films that year that I liked bigger. I didn't even nominate it. I like this one. I like this one a lot better. Last time was, I have some powers, I'm scared, I'm going to run away, and they go bring her back. It's really all that is, with like a twist bad guy ending. This one actually has plot. The last one was an adventure movie. This is a quest. They have to go to the Enchanted Forest and fix the Enchanted Forest and solve a mystery. I was all for that. Did you notice? I'm going to give you a did you notice.
Yes.
There was no villain.
That's true. You're right. Because in the first one, the villain is exposed. It's the guy who I think Anna was engaged to at the time.
And... Well, all the character development is overcoming personal identity issues. There's no bad guy.
Well, and there's hints of, you think there will be a bad guy, and the story evolves in such a way that it really is about kind of bringing everyone together, these two sort of different cultures. And so it speaks to some really big themes. So it was very impressive in that way. I think it's a little overstuffed in the themes for some of the younger kids. And, you know, the girls in the audience all loved it. So I have no doubt, no matter what, these movies are about the sisters. It's about the sisterhood bond.
The girl's gonna love it because there's an ice princess riding a magical water horse.
And there's your permafrost snowman Olaf, who's back, you know, played by Josh Gad.
I have an Olaf question.
Yes.
Is he going through puberty?
I think he's either going through puberty, or he's just starting to question his existence a little bit more.
Olaf's issue is, everything's perfect right now, but everything changes. Everything's going to change. And he's worried about that. He doesn't want anything to change.
Yeah, because he is still very much childlike, and that's sort of what he's lending to that whole atmosphere. But because he's seeing things almost through a child's eyes, but he's realizing that that things are changing. And each one of the characters in this film has their own signature song, and so for him, I think it was called like "When I Grow Older." And so that's his moment.
His moment is like, I'm growing hair in unexpected places.
No, his other moment is when he does a very funny recap of what happened in the first film. I thought that was also a very good moment for him. But yeah, so he had his little song. I do think...
Well, the funniest song is Kristoff.
Oh, Kristoff has the standout.
He's actually singing, "I'm literally lost in the woods," but he takes it to mean other things as well. It reminded me of Chris Pine from Into the Woods.
Yes,
it's this really,
yes.
It turns into this 1980s power ballad. Mm-hmm. And for a second there, he sounds like Peter Cetera.
He does. It's very funny. And to me, that's one of just those fun moments of the movie that's for adults, because kids are not going to get the reference to that cheesy 80s video style that Kristoff is suddenly sort of put into. But in the end, it really is about Elsa and Anna. And so you've got your two big singing stars back. You've got Idina Menzel, who's just a power voice, and Kristen Bell's back as Anna. And so ultimately, the two of them each have their knockout numbers. The one problem with Idina Menzel stuff now to me is every time she started singing, they all kind of sounded alike. So it was harder to differentiate
Into the Unknown.
One song. Into the Unknown, I think, is going to be that maybe the Oscar bait song.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Show Yourself. That was my hunch.
No, see, I think it's going to be either Into the Unknown, or possibly they could do a little something with Anna powering through a very motivational message in a song called The Next Right Thing. And so that's all about where this film is going. It's all about Anna and Elsa trying to repair something from their familial past, a wrong that was done against these people up north, this indigenous group up north. And so it's all about how, you know, we need to save these people, but we also need to work to save our own kingdom of Arendelle. And they learn about some stuff that went on in their family history and the importance of doing the right thing. And so I do think that Kristen Bell's song, The Next Right Thing, could be one of those ones that sticks with the kids. This is not the same. It's still a Broadway-style soundtrack in the same vein as the first one, but I don't think the songs are ultimately as memorable. But no matter what, it's still the kind of movie that kids will play on repeat, and that the soundtrack will still probably resonate. We'll find a place in the Disney Channel car for those people who have to suffer through listening to a whole lot of Frozen songs over the course of the next year.
No, none of the songs are very catchy at all, but I chuckled later on as I was driving home thinking about the film. I just watched a Disney movie about decolonization.
it really, you know, and ecological, you know, there's a theme about ecological disaster, and there's a lot there, but it really, in the end, it's the story of these two sisters, and that's why I think maybe You didn't connect with the first movie the way a lot of young girls did, and so for them, this is a continuation. It's a very solid, very good sequel. And so while I don't think it captures the absolute magic of the first one, I think it still does a pretty good job, because some sequels really disappoint, and this does not disappoint.
For those Thanksgiving families now that no longer have to entertain children, but still want to go to a very family-friendly film, they'll most likely go see A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Tom Hanks as Fred Rogers. I know we all remember from last year, 2018's documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor. That was actually about Fred the person. This is who he was. This film is actually about Fred the character. He's actually mostly a supporting character. He's in about half the film. It's the audience actually has a character. The lead character, Lloyd Vogel, played by Matthew Rhys, he's us. He's this cynical, pessimistic, unsure. He knows Fred Rogers is an act, and he has to go and interview him because he's an investigative reporter for Esquire. This is inspired by a true story, a 1998 article in Esquire, and he actually comes to believe, and eventually perhaps come to celebrate the fact that Fred Rogers was not an act.
He's
actually
the real deal.
That was him you were watching on the PBS screen. He was that kind. He was that peaceful. He was that patient, which overall produces a very patient and peaceful kind of film. Mm-hmm. I really, really liked this film.
Yeah, it's one of those films that you just can't lose going to see it. Everybody comes out of it just feeling that sense of inspiration and aspiration to just be kinder. And as you mentioned, I mean, Tom Hanks, I think he's going to be put up for Best Supporting. I think people are automatically sometimes assuming that it's a Tom Hanks movie and that he'd be potentially a lead actor nomination. But in fact, he is a supporting role in this film. One drawback that I had heard, some people were complaining, and I think there was a little bit of justification. The voice that Tom Hanks chooses to use, his accent, is a little Forrest Gumpish. I felt that in the first 10 minutes of watching it. But then to hear Tom Hanks explain how he chose the particular voice that he wanted to use to convey who Mr. Rogers was, there's a very particular and deliberate cadence and compassion that provides the undertone of that accent. And once you get past the first few minutes, you absolutely, you go along with it and you embrace it, and it works. This is just, it's just such an endearing movie. And it's, it's got some drama. There is some dramatic license. It is inspired by, I think Tom Junot is the guy who wrote the Esquire article, and he has acknowledged that, he didn't, this is not a total true portrayal of his character, but that the essence of the relationship and the essence of Mr. Rogers, he felt, was truly captured.
Even though this is about a real man, Fred Rogers, it's not a biopic. Directed by Mary L. Heller, we know her from Diary of a Teenage Girl, great film, and last year's Can You Ever Forgive Me, starring Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant, which was nominated for a few Oscars. She made a very bold choice, a risky choice, that I think worked so well, it catapulted the movie and gave it one of the year's perfect scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Lloyd and Fred are having lunch, and Fred, Lloyd's having a rough day, and Fred's like, just sit there a minute and take a breath and think about all the people that loved you into being. And for a full minute, the movie theater is silent. Nobody even twitches. You won't even munch your popcorn, because Tom Hanks breaks the wall. He stares directly into the camera. He's looking at you. He's staring in your eyes, and then he asks you the same question. Think of the people who loved you into being, who are so proud of you for being you right now. And he just stares at you for like a minute, and it works. It shouldn't work.
Yeah.
And it's based on something that really happened. I looked it up. It's on YouTube. You can Google it right now. He did this at the Daytime Emmy Awards and had him in the palm of his hand.
It is. It's such a powerful moment, and you're sharing it with everyone around you, and nobody is going to be the one to mess that up. And I think that was so important. It also, the second perfect scene in this is the spontaneous eruption. There's which I believe also happened in real life, is Mr. Rogers was riding the subway, and a bunch of school kids, really broke into a chorus of "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" and the impact that he had on them. And I love that it was probably before there were cell phones and selfies, so people weren't just worried about taking selfies with somebody and capturing the moment. It was real, and it's just another great scene. And also, his widow, Fred Rogers' widow, Joanne, for our screening, introduced the film. I don't know if that's if that's attached to all of the screenings. She does have a quick cameo in this, but she's very quick to point out that that this film is still a very fitting tribute to Fred Rogers, who died in 2003. But she also really says she looks at it as this call to action, you know, that you really simply, it's a call to action to be more kind in these very divisive times. And so for that alone, how can you just not embrace what this film is trying to do?
This is a perfect Thanksgiving film. This is a chance to commune spiritually, not religiously, spiritually, not only with your family, but everyone else in that theater. And I guarantee you, you will all walk out in a good mood. Even if you were fighting and squabbling about whatever, but when you walk into the theater, you'll all be in a good mood and consciously be trying to be kinder to them on the ride home.
Absolutely.
All right, our next one is, it's about a family. So I guess you can say it's a family film.
Yes.
But Waves is not necessarily a family film. Now
it's covered, not a feel-good family film.
It's not. Well, even though there is redemption, somewhat. We've covered Waves a lot. We've even interviewed the Waves talent, which we will air next week.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind everybody that of the two kids, the two stars, the one I personally really liked was Kelvin Harrison Jr. as Tyler. He owns the first half of the film, Part A. He was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award this week, but not for Waves,
right.
For Loose. But Taylor Russell, the girl, his sister, who owns Part B of the movie, she was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actress this week for this role.
It's interesting because there are two very different halves to this film, and each of those, you know, young actors has to carry their half. My complaint about the film is ultimately you put those two halves together with this very critical climax in the middle, a very tragic event that happens, and it kind of bloats the movie a little bit. The first half of it, too, is a very frenetic pace. It's a little bit of sensory overload to me. And so that will turn some people off. It's still, the excellent performances make it worth sort of riding out and sort of just making your way through the waves, the emotional roller coaster that this film is. Heart-wrenching dynamics. There's a lot of, like, toxic masculinity stuff going on in there. But yes, as you said, it does end with some feeling of redemption or salvation for this family, which will help you get through if you do happen to see it during that Thanksgiving period.
Writer-director Trey Edward Schultz, I think, is very effective at showing us the emotional highs and lows of a 17-year-old. You know, your brain is not fully formed yet at 17. You are incapable of handling the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, the stuff that Tyler comes into contact with. And you're watching him and you're like, just sit down. Just stop. You're actually begging him, just stop for a second. I get it. You're sad. You're angry. And every one of us, when we were 17, had probably had issues with impulse control. And but for the grace of God, you know, we didn't end up like, you know, whatever Tyler chooses to do in this film. So that, I think, was very, that's going to produce a certain amount of empathy throughout the theater.
Yeah, and as good as those two young actors are, it's a good ensemble all around because Sterling K. Brown, who's having quite the year, is the dad in this film, and he's a very driven guy who kind of almost pushes his son to a bit of a breaking point. So not your typical Randall from This Is Us kind of character. And then you've also got Renee Elise Goldsberry is his wife in the film, and Lucas Hedges has a very intriguing role, supporting role in this film. So it's good acting all around, and so that definitely adds to its viability for a larger audience to try and check it out.
Well, those are the three films opening this weekend, today, this Friday, and Saturday, Sunday.
Wait, can I play a quick game of 6 degrees of entertainment separation?
Ooh, impress me.
Because of what we've already just talked about. So, Renee Elise Goldsberry, she plays the wife in Waves.
Mm-hmm.
She was also Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton on Broadway.
It means nothing to me. I never saw Hamilton.
And so that's a shame because the other person who was in the exact same performance of Hamilton that I saw on Broadway was Jonathan Goff, who is Kristoff in Frozen.
You mean Peter Cetera?
No. And so there's a little interesting little overlap.
There is.
And then Sterling K. Brown.
That's right. I do remember.
In Waves.
I heard him voice a character in Frozen.
He voices a character in Frozen. So he's got two films out this week. But his TV wife, Beth, on TV, Susan Kelechi Watson, plays Lloyd Vogel's wife in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
How is this all this possible?
Isn't that amazing? Don't you just see the insane confluence that happens?
Invisible
this
threads.
Week? It's invisible, but it's like more like 1 degree of separation, which I just thought was cool. Although I will say that Susan Kelechi Watson's character as Lloyd Vogel's wife in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is much more in line with the character she plays on This Is Us than Sterling K. Brown's character in Waves.
All right, since Thanksgiving is on a Thursday, they don't wait until Friday for the new releases that week. They're coming out on a Wednesday, so they're already in theaters when you're going to go over the weekend. And there's three big ones, and one we didn't see. 21 Bridges starring Chad McBoseman. It looks like an action film. I honestly can tell you nothing about it.
Yeah, it has something to do. He's like a cop, and it's some suspense thing, and I'm not really sure what it was about. But hey, if you happen to catch it, let us know.
But the next one is something I'm very happy is showing up. You don't get a lot of murder mysteries. I know we actually had one this year called Murder Mystery. Came out on Netflix, Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston. But this one's a true, like, Agatha Christie with, you know, kind of a wink and a blink murder mystery. It's a true whodunit. Everyone has a motive. Everyone could have done it. But you have to spend a little over 2 hours finding out who done it. And this is from Rian Johnson. I really like, I remember him from Looper. I really liked Looper. And then he split the fanboys down the middle with the last Star Wars film, Episode 8, The Last Jedi. A lot of people were up in arms in that because, you know, a lot of strong female leads, and a lot of Star Wars fans don't like that.
Oh, too bad.
But he's back now with a very strong original screenplay, Knives Out. And you mentioned the ensemble cast in Waves.
Yeah.
Talk to me about ensemble cast in Knives Out.
Oh, it's a great one. And that's this is just such a stylish and sharp whodunit. And so it's got Christopher Plummer is really basically the patriarch of this family. And he gets killed shortly before his or right after his 85th birthday. And so that's where the plot comes around. And it's all about his family members and his staff and trying to figure out then who done it. But you've got Daniel Craig playing this.
He's playing Benoit
Blanc. Kentucky Fried Chicken investigator.
It's the best character name of this year, Benoit Blanc.
Benoit Blanc, who I think has a little bit of Detective Inspector Poirot in him, maybe.
I was going to say Clouseau.
And a little bit of Clouseau and Poirot and all of them. He is like embodying every cliched investigator you could possibly imagine. And he shows up to investigate this dysfunctional family and devoted staff to see who might have caused poor Harlan's untimely death. But you've got Chris Evans, Captain America himself, is just a great little role for him. Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette. I mean, my goodness.
Some big names.
These are big names. And they all seem like they are having such fun with their juicy roles.
And they all get to play like, it wasn't me, but I have motive.
Exactly. And so it's like Clue, but way smarter and more sophisticated in its humor. And so it's another good choice for a family that might be interested in seeing that kind of next level kind of film. So whereas something like A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is where you'll walk out being like, you know, I feel kind. This one, you're just going to be like, I promise not to kill any of you
they're
after
also
Thanksgiving
like
dinner.
A Thanksgiving real family because they argue politically. You know, they're arguing about red hats and kids in cages and crossing the border illegally.
Yeah, there's like, immigration
that's
stuff.
That's exactly what people are going to be arguing about right before they walk into this theater and as they walk out of it.
Well, and I think Rian Johnson did an intro before the screening of this one saying, please, 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 critics, everyone, anyone who goes and see this movie, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. And so you can't, everyone has to be very careful. It's like,
I'm not even going to talk about the plot.
No.
That's the plot, whodunit.
Right, it's a whodunit. And so I would just urge everyone who does see it to sort of, to take that to heart as well and just let the next people go in because it's kind of fun to play along. And I do think Daniel Craig just seemed to really be relishing.
He
really is. And you don't really understand why he is investigating, but But as he sort of takes turns going through these family members and these staff members and to try and figure out what's going on, again, they just all seem like they had such a blast doing this. And there are lots of little red herrings dropped in throughout. And yeah, you cannot ask for a better ensemble to just make this a fun film.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. The third film opening on Wednesday is called Queen and Slim. Queen and Slim is, it's a ride, man. It's an African-American Bonnie and Clyde, but they don't want to be Bonnie and Clyde. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, they wanted to be the bad guy. They wanted to go rob banks and cause havoc and mayhem. Daniel Kaluuya, who we know from Get Out, and Jodie Turner-Smith, they don't want to be anybody's poster boy. They don't want to be bad to anybody, but circumstances puts them on the road, on the run from the law, and a nationwide manhunt. They're in Cleveland. There's a traffic stop that goes bad. The cop ends up getting shot. So they're, and they can't turn themselves in. They've just got to go. And so it's a road movie. They don't know each other. They were on a first date when this happened. And this is the kind of movie where the audience was into it. And when something happens, they would clap and cheer and hoot and holler, and you just get in with it. And when something bad happens, there'd actually be boo, and I think I saw someone throw some popcorn. First-time feature film director, Melina Matsoukas. She actually is coming from the world of music videos. She does all of Rihanna's and Beyonce's music videos. There's a supporting actor in here who might make my supporting actor list. His name's Bokeem Woodbine. He's a character actor. You'd look at him and be like, oh, that guy. I know him from, what do I know him from? He's so good as Uncle Earl. You know what this reminded me of? It reminded me of Green Book. They're on a tour of the South under less than hospitable circumstances.
Wow. That's,
it does. And for a lot of time, they're in this turquoise, really old car. Not as old as Green Book. But yeah, it was a wry take on that. It's a rough watch at times. You're on their side. You feel really bad for their circumstances. There's a lot of commentary about the United States of America. There are a lot of issues about race, about class. A lot of people are going to be talking about this film.
So is it a contemporary film as opposed to Green Book?
It is. It takes place today.
Okay. Because I have not seen it. So since I have not yet been able to see it, is this one that you think I need to put on my radar, or is it really not a mainstream chick flick?
It's a very good film. It's probably not going to go all the way.
Okay.
It's going to get like a supporting actor from me, but that's it. I think it's worthwhile. I think you should see it just to join the conversation.
Okay.
Because this is something that's going to create a conversation. People are going to talk about this.
And speaking of catching up, though, didn't you go and see Ford versus Ferrari finally?
Well, so many people over the weekend went to see it, making it the nation's number one film, and I mean, by a long shot. Mm-hmm. I did. I had to go see what everyone was talking about. Because, like, how can this adult film about car racing be that good? And it was very good.
It is very
good. I caught up with it. I'm glad I did. Thank you for pushing me to go see it. It was very good.
Yeah, so Matt Damon and Christian Bale. And so I think that's also one that's still out there at Thanksgiving. So if you are going and you're like, oh my gosh, Frozen is sold out and Knives Out is sold out and Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is sold out, you still have Ford versus Ferrari, I think, is a very solid option.
I was very surprised at how bad the Ford Motor Company actually comes out looking in that film. The Independent Spirit Awards, I wanted to bring that up. The nominations were just announced, I think, yesterday. And it must be, it feels early, because those are always the day before the Oscars in a tent in, like, Santa Monica on the beach. And it's the standard things you thought would have been nominated. Marriage Story had a million of them. The Lighthouse. I was very happy to see Taylor Russell show up. I was very happy to see Jonathan Majors show up, supporting actor for Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, right.
The ones that I was really, really surprised about. To Dust. You remember Schmuel?
Yes! Oh my goodness!
Schmuel got a screenplay nomination.
Oh, that is awesome. That is one that nobody has seen, and I love. I just thought, I mean, I got a kick out of that.
It's up against Marriage Story.
It won't win, you know? But to even get to get the nomination.
Got a Independent Spirit Award nomination.
That is great. If you haven't seen To Dust, look for it because it is going to be the oddest thing you would see all year.
It's great. That's talking about Broderick, a nice Thanksgiving film, actually.
I don't know why not.
Just because it's about dead bodies.
That's really interesting. I know you love those Indie Spirit Awards, and I realized too when I saw what was nominated that I do need to catch up and see things like The Lighthouse I have not seen yet. And so that racked up a few awards.
The Farewell didn't. I didn't see The Farewell.
Oh, right. The Farewell got quite a few, too. And that is a very good film. I think that might do well.
Well, here's to you, Shmuel Shmuel. quick recap for this Thanksgiving episode of Cinema Clash. Frozen 2, it's better than the first Frozen, even though none of the songs are.
It's not better than the first Frozen, because I think the fact that the songs are not better than the first Frozen.
Songs still make the film.
The songs do make the film. Oh. They made Let It Go made
Toy
Frozen.
Story was great without a whole bunch of songs in it.
But it's a different, but that's just it. Toy Story doesn't rely on the soundtrack. This is a, this is like a Broadway show in
Lion
the making.
Lion King works without all the songs.
But I'm just saying that I preferred, the first one had a magic that was so unique and original, and the girl power between the sisters, that's what made it so special. This one is still special because you are getting more of that. But I don't agree that it's better than the first, but I will be curious to see ultimately how the two compare at the box office.
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is the best film of the week. It's one of the best films of the year. It's 4 stars. It's so powerful, it will make you want to be a better person.
Frozen 2 is the best film of the week for little girls. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is the best film of the week for everyone. So I think that's sort of the distinction.
Waves. It's a very, very tough watch, but it's so well put together that it's a should watch.
It's a should watch. Whether or not you really want to watch it at Thanksgiving, I don't know. That would be a really tough sell to me. But it's worth keeping on your radar to maybe stream later.
Well, Knives Out is worth it because we just don't get that many whodunits. It's not a dead genre, but it's certainly a lesser genre now. And this is a classic form of it.
We don't get good ones. And so to me, it was a little bit like Murder on the Orient Express a couple years back. But this one, just the ensemble and just the wit makes it better.
Make a bet. When you're looking at the movie poster before the film starts, me and my friend who we went with, we just said, all right, we're going to pick one person who we think whodunit. We're both wrong. But, someone might get it right and be like, oh, I told you, I knew it all along.
That would be a really fun, like, little Thanksgiving game. Everybody pick who you think has done it or will do it. And then maybe somebody gets a prize, like an extra piece of pumpkin pie at the end.
Queen and Slim is a roller coaster. Don't see it at home. Go to the theater to see this because it's like Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. It's a communal experience. Everyone's going to get into it. You'll cheer at the same time. You'll groan at the same time. And you'll walk out going, man, that just hit me in the gut.
I'm all for those communal experiences in the theater. But there's so much out there that it's really hard to figure out how you can possibly squeeze all of this in. So maybe if you're a little more, you're just sort of in a little bit of a downer mood, then something like Waves or Queen and Slim will be the better choices. But I just think it's really hard for those two films to break through when you've got things like Frozen 2, Knives Out, and Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and Ford versus Ferrari still out there.
All right, listeners, you have a lot of work to do. Let us know. Twitter, Facebook, what you actually end up seeing. I know if you have little kids, you're going to go see Frozen 2, but for the rest of you, let us know how you made your choice. Like, you know what? We were going to see Fred. We were going to see Knives Out. Tell us, how do you actually determine what you go see over the Thanksgiving holiday, since there's everything to choose from?
Yeah, you can tweet us at the Cinema Clash on Twitter. And so next week, we're going to take it off in order to actually have Thanksgiving meals with our families. And we have nothing to see because we've already seen everything, but we'll be able to tell everyone about all their choices. But so next week for Thanksgiving, though, we are going to still serve up a Cinema Clash for you. We have a bonus edition of the Cinema Clash featuring that interview that we did at Middleburg last month with the director and 2 stars of the movie Waves. So you can catch that interview in our regular time slot on RadioSaintPete.com, but also on demand on iTunes and on Block Talk Radio. So lots of options out there.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl. Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.